We need a real investigation. I don't think we have one yet.
Yes, it's true. And yes, it is a crime. Well,
thank you, Cleta Mitchell. Thank you for that explanation. Really interesting and kind of appalling.
Thank you,
really.
Tucker.
Cleta Mitchell is somebody with great courage, and she's involved with your litigation and lawsuits and all of this stuff. She literally gave up her whole practice not to get paid. She saw how corrupt it was, how disgusting it was, how dirty it was. And I want to thank you on behalf of everybody in this room and everybody in this country. You are a hell of a lawyer and tough. And that's what we need.
Hello, I'm Cleta Mitchell. Welcome to this episode of Who's Counting with Cleta Mitchell. It's a podcast about all things having to do with elections, how elections should be run, how elections sometimes aren't run the way they're supposed to be, and about our electoral system as a whole. And today we are very fortunate to have with us as our guest, Hans von Spakovsky, who is the Senior Legal Fellow at the Heritage Foundation, and who has more information in his head about election laws, about everything related to the electoral system of our country. He is a prolific writer. You can go to the Heritage Foundation website, and you can look up the many articles and papers that Hans has written on things related to elections. And most importantly, you can go to the website and about the topic that we're going to be talking about today. So Hans, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Cleta.
Hans is a regular guest. We have Hans on because he keeps churning out more papers and reports on things that people need to know about elections. And today we're going to talk about something that Hans has talked about on a previous episode of Who's Counting, which is the Election Integrity Scorecard, or index, that Heritage has put together. So Hans, tell everybody about the index, about the scorecard, and then let's talk about your recent update, because it's sort of a mid-year review since you released it last year. So tell everybody about what that is. What is the index? What's the scorecard?
The Election Integrity Scorecard, it's available on the website of the Heritage Foundation, heritage.org, and it is a rating of every single state in the country, plus the District of Columbia, which, even though it's not a state, does have three Electoral College votes in the presidential race. It's a rating of each state with regard to how good or how bad their election laws are when it comes to both access and security. In other words, how good are those laws at ensuring the fairness and honesty of elections in that state? And it took us a whole year, Cleta, to develop this. We started in February of 2021, not too long after the 2020 presidential election. And the way we did it, just very quickly, is we came up with a set of best practices recommendations. 47 different criteria. It covers everything from whether a state has a voter ID law to how do they handle absentee ballots to how do they clean up and maintain the accuracy of their voter rolls and other miscellaneous but important items like do they ban private funding of election offices, Zuckbucks, as they were called in the 2020 election. And then it took us a whole year. But we went through and we analyzed the election laws of all 50 states and the district and compared them to those best practice standards and came up with a rating system. And a perfect score is 100. No state in the country scored 100. And what we just did recently was we updated the scorecard based on the latest changes in state election laws as state legislative sessions have ended. As you know, Cleta, most states only have a legislative session in the first quarter of the year. So once those were done, we went through and analyzed upwards of 100 and more new election laws across the country to see, do they make states better? Did they make them worse?
And so, can you share with us some of the things that you found when you did the analysis?
Sure.
So, I mean, you issued the report in, what was it, December 31st,
yeah,
January 1st?
Right.
And Well, first, before we start about the update, tell me what kind of response you received from some of the states, say, in the bottom half of the rankings. Did you get a lot of feedback?
Yes, we've gotten some very angry feedback.
Did you get bad feedback? Well, I think Nevada was last. Aren't they last?
Yeah. Well, Hawaii is actually last, but I think Nevada is next to last. yeah, we've gotten some angry feedback from some states, but we've had other states, you know, call us up and say, boy, this is really good. And in particular, we've had state legislators tell us that this scorecard is terrific because, look, the way we put it together, you can click on a map of the United States and you can pull up any state. And there we'll have a summary of the best standards applied to every state. So, for example, you can immediately see, does a state have a voter ID law, yes or no? And we've had folks in the grassroots, we've had just regular citizens call and say, this is great because now I know what the improvements are that need to be made by my state, and I know what to talk to my state legislator about in terms of things they need to change.
Well, you know, I actually, I've used it with grassroots groups myself when they've said, well, we need to work on legislation. How do we start? I say, place to go to the Heritage Scorecard, look at the list of issues and criteria and look at your state, and that's a good place to start.
Right. And by the way, on that note, we do also have some model legislation as part of the scorecard.
Well, I think that's really important. Here are some things what are some of the things that you found happened? What happened in the 2022 legislative sessions that you can report on?
Well, like I said, we just posted an update. 14 states improved their scores by making changes. The biggest thing that states did both this year and some last year was banning private funding of elections. That occurred in numerous states. In the update just posted, Missouri actually got the best improvement because they just passed this very comprehensive election law, a really good one, that does everything from putting in voter ID to putting in measures to help get cleaner and more accurate voter registration rolls. Tennessee also improved. In fact, they moved to the top of the list because they passed a very big bill that said that election officials would start to have to check the statewide voter registration list against things like jury information.
Oh, you've been advocating that for a long time.
Yeah, which is a great thing. And also, for the first time, they're going to start using commercial data. Mm. Look, most people know this. Credit agencies probably have the best data in the country, much better than and more up-to-date than government data. Yeah, they sometimes make mistakes, but not as many mistakes as the government makes. And, you know, they have a financial incentive to make sure they have accurate information. And they have a lot of good data on individuals and where they're now living, whether they're still alive or not. And so Tennessee has said, you can start using that data to try to make sure that your voter registration list is current.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
So states really... Do you think that they looked at your scorecard as a guide to what they might do to make improvements?
Well, I don't want to give us too much credit. I credit state legislators with realizing what they should do. But I do know that a number of states actually looked at our scorecard and did use it, I believe, to guide what they were doing. I think I even heard that there were people running for office in certain states who used our scorecard to say, well, I'm going to try to improve our score by doing what the Heritage Foundation is recommending.
Well, that's great.
I'm glad to hear
that. So how about some of the blue states like New York and California and some of those? I don't gather that they were doing anything to try to improve. And I think I read something from the Brennan Center applauding some of the crazier, what we would call crazier things that they were encouraging states to do.
Yeah, no, they did not improve. They stayed in the bottom of the ranks, particularly California and New York. Actually, New York would have dropped more, even more, but for the intelligence of its voters. And what I'm talking about is, you may recall, Kalita, that they actually had a referendum on the ballot in the November elections back in New York that would have changed the state to same-day voter registration, meaning that people could just walk into a polling place on election day, register and vote, which in New York is a real problem because there's no voter ID requirement. And they also wanted to switch the state to no-fault absentee balloting to try to expand absentee balloting. Those are both negatives in our scorecard. Those are both things pushed by the Brennan Center and the left, even by folks like Chuck Schumer, the senator there. The voters of New York voted down both measures. So they're smarter. They're smarter than some of their elected politicians.
Well, that's not a surprise. But right.
And like in Wisconsin, if I might, you might just mention, look, a lot of the improvements were due to legislative changes. Wisconsin actually improved its score, not because of the legislature, but because the Wisconsin Supreme Court issued a decision saying that when the state election commission said it was okay for locals to put up unsurveilled, unguarded drop boxes for people to put their absentee ballots in, they didn't have the legal authority to do that. So basically, drop boxes are gone in Wisconsin, which is a good thing from a security standpoint, and that actually improved Wisconsin's score.
Well, that's so you can actually get an improvement even if the legislature, I think the legislature passed some things, but their Democratic governor vetoed it.
Yeah.
Correctly. Yeah. So Hans, let me ask you about a couple of things I've been thinking about for the next round of analysis, and maybe you can tell me this is already in there or what you think about this. But one of the things that I've been concerned about, and which is now going to be an issue before the U.S. Supreme Court in this upcoming term, and that is the way in which the judiciary has stepped in at the behest of Mark Elias, the Democratic lawyer, and all of this massive number of leftist litigation groups who they can't win at the legislature to get changes in the laws, so they wait and then take their concerns to judges who may be partisan themselves, and they sue a state, like in North Carolina, they'd sue the North Carolina Board of Elections, which is a democratically controlled board, and the Attorney General is a Democrat who won't defend the law, and end up with basically judicial decisions that supersede legislatures' decisions about the election laws.
Right.
And I've thought, you know, what are the things that we ought to have in law, that legislatures should put in their laws to try to keep that from happening? Like, you know, making it harder for just any organization to bring a lawsuit. Shouldn't they have standing? In order to have standing, shouldn't you have to show some particularized injury from the provision of the law that you're trying to have invalidated? I don't know if you thought, I mean, I know you've thought about all of that. So how can we make it harder for these organizations to just overcome the will of the elected representatives?
Well, in fact, that was something we considered when we were setting up the scorecard. And so one of the standards that we put in, one of the criteria that we put in that we judge states on is whether, one, state law or the state constitution gives the legislature the right to intervene in any lawsuit that is filed by anyone trying to change an applicable election law. Not only that, but we also put in a criteria saying that the state should have a law saying that no executive branch official should be able to settle a lawsuit without the okay of the legislature when it's a lawsuit and a settlement in which, for example, an attorney general says, Oh, yeah, the deadline for absentee ballots being received on Election Day, we're just going to waive that. We'll agree to settle the lawsuit and not apply that state law. And as you know, that's the kind of thing that was happening, those kind of collusive lawsuits and collusive settlements in 2020. And so we have put that into our scorecard as a criteria to try to prevent that from happening and giving the legislature the power to not only intervene in lawsuits, but to prevent any kind of settlement that's going to simply waive a law passed by the state legislature.
Well, I'm going to send you my suggestions for new criteria.
Okay.
For the next round, one of which is I think that citizens ought to be able to have standing.
Part of our criteria.
Oh, good.
I should have mentioned that. We also put in that we think any citizen should have standing to sue, for example, any election official who is refusing to follow and abide by an election law passed by the state legislature.
Oh, that's great, because we've seen that over and over in the last 2 years, where the Secretary of State of Pennsylvania sent out a letter to all the county election officials in September of 2020 telling them that they should not require signatures on absentee ballots validated. Just ignore that statute. And of course, the political, very left-leaning state Supreme Court said that was okay, which I don't understand how a court can look at a statute and justify saying, well, even though that's the law, we're going to say it doesn't apply. How is that possible? I don't get that. How does that happen?
Well, it's because you have judges who aren't acting as judges. They're not applying the law as written. They're acting as if they're super legislators. You know, if they think that ought to be the rule, for example, in Pennsylvania, then they should resign their judgeships and run for the state legislature.
I agree. I was thinking this past year when I saw some of the ways in which state Supreme Courts were acting as legislative bodies on the redistricting issues.
Yeah.
I was thinking, well, we should just organize grassroots campaigning to call their offices, because, you know, they say, oh, you know, you can't call us because you know, we're behind the black robes and we're above it all. But if you're acting as a legislature, maybe you ought to be treated like a legislature.
Right.
But, you know, there's another thing that I've been thinking about, and maybe you can tell me. But I've been watching this and looking at the 2020 results in several states, as well as seeing things in the primaries in 2022. And where the number of, if you look at the certified election results, that the number of votes is not equal to the number of ballot images or ballots, and that number isn't equal to the number of voters, that those are all different numbers. And are you aware of any state? I think Pennsylvania requires reconciliation of those numbers, but I think that they're ignoring that. But is that something that you've run across or done much research about when looking at the state election laws?
No, but as you know, I recently published a paper on election audit. The fact that they ought to be done, they ought to be made a requirement of state law. And then I go through and describe how those audits ought to be conducted. And that is one of the things that auditors ought to look at, is whether all the numbers were reconciled so that the number of registered voters, for example, who records show showed up to vote is the same as the number of ballots that were counted. I mean, that's so basic. That is so basic. And with those numbers don't match, there's got to be an intensive investigation to find out what is causing the discrepancy.
Well, you know, I've almost come to the belief that they should not be allowed to certify the election until they reconcile. It's just like a bank teller, that his cash drawer has to be reconciled at the end of every day. And I think that if they had to reconcile that before certification, I think maybe you might change some behavior in election offices. They might be more concerned about making certain that chain of custody and keeping track of spoiled ballots and making sure that if all those numbers have to match before they can certify, that would, I've just been thinking about that. That's an idea. It's not yet a plan, but it, as you say, it's so basic. I think people would be shocked to know that that doesn't happen.
Right. Well, I think that's something that you and I offline need to talk more about.
I think so. But, well, I really appreciate, so you're going to, I appreciate what you've done this year. Are you going to keep doing these analyses on a regular basis, sort of semi-annual?
Yes. No, we're planning every time legislatures act in the various states, we will look and see, did they pass any election laws? We keep a track also of court decisions, particularly from state Supreme Courts, and we will continually be updating the scorecard.
All right, and if people want to go look at the scorecard and look and see where their state is, they just go to heritage.org/election scorecard. heritage.org/election scorecard.
Right.
Yeah, it's not hard to find, everybody. You can find it. It's very easy to find, and it's very easy to manage and navigate. And so I would urge everybody to go take a look and see where your state ranks. Do you have any parting thoughts or words or advice for people about what they might do?
Yeah, just keep in mind that while many of the standards may require legislative action, there's a lot of things in the scorecard that just require local election officials doing their job. So folks can look through there and start asking questions of their local county election board. Why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing that? You know, there are all kinds of things in there. They don't need the legislature to act. They just need election officials to finally do something.
Well, you know what, Hans, that's a great idea. And maybe what we'll do is come back to you because the Election Integrity Network, we published a series of training videos mm-hmm. about what local election integrity task forces can do and all. And maybe this would be a good training video to say, here are some of the questions specifically that you should go ask your local election officials. Because we really do have to be in those offices year in and year out. And the left doesn't want us there. And sometimes the bureaucrats don't want us there. But just like parents and school boards, we've learned citizens need to be at the election offices.
Yep, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly.
Well, and you're someone who's a former, you've been an election official.
Right.
In two different states.
Yep, two different counties and two different states. And let me tell you, it's at the county level. That's where the things are really done. That's where all the work is accomplished to run elections.
Well, you know, that's one of the things that I tell people is that all elections are local.
Yes.
We vote. Everything is local. So you've been on the Fulton County, Georgia Election Board, and you've been on the Fairfax County, Virginia Election Board. And we need to have people like you. It's hard to find people like you. You're a unicorn, Hans. But but we need people at those election offices year in and year out. So that's where it happens. But you have given us great guidance. Urge everybody, go to heritage.org/election scorecard and make sure that you see what your state is doing and see what you might do at your local election office to make sure that the elections are conducted properly according to these standards year in and year out. So with that, thank you for joining us, Hans.
Sure thing.
And thank you to all of you for listening and watching. We hope that you will share this episode with your friends. We hope that you will sign up. Go to www.whoscounting.us. That's whoscounting.us. Sign up to receive our newsletter and to learn more about what you can do to make sure that your elections in your area are being conducted appropriately. And be part of the system. Be part of the many, many, many patriots all over the country are working hard to save our elections. And with that, we bid you good day. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for listening to Who's Counting. The Who's Counting podcast is produced by the Conservative Partnership Institute's Election Integrity Network. It is filmed and recorded at CPI Studios in Washington, D.C. Help us grow this show by sharing this episode with a friend and be sure to subscribe and to give us a good review. We need your word of mouth because big tech can't be trusted and tries to cancel us daily. Help fight back by visiting whoscounting.us and sign up for this podcast, for our newsletter, and to become part of the Election Integrity Network.